Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Tomorrow will be the beginning of history. Tomorrow, the United States Supreme Court will hear oral arguments on whether gay and lesbian couples in the United States of America have the right to marry. The history will be made when the decision comes down, and that probably won't be till the end of June. But history will already be in the making tomorrow as we listen to the oral arguments on equality. The marriage equality movement, much like any civil rights movement, has a history. And unlike the civil rights movement or the feminist movement or any of the other movements in America for equal rights, I was a large part of that movement. Very proud of it. Very proud of the very early role I took. This may be the last great civil rights equality fight that we have. There will still be other civil rights fights, if only because this U.S. Supreme Court has gone in reverse on issues like voting rights, for example, in basically weakening the Voting Rights Act of 1965 to be so weak that it's really hard for blacks who want to vote in the South to get around racist laws. There will always be civil rights fights. But the marriage equality may be the last expressly unequal law that may be struck down. In other words, most of the racism and misogyny and other isms that continue to occur in the United States, favoritism toward the rich, favoritism towards people of the majority culture. Most of that today is individuals discriminating. It's people not treating other people fairly. It's not usually, in this day and age, the government having an express policy that some people have less rights than other people. That, of course, was the policy in the civil rights movement for blacks. That was the policy prior to the feminist movement for women. And that remains the policy in some 13 to 15 states, depending on how you count it, regarding marriage. The policy in the state where I grew up, in Tennessee, Kentucky, in Michigan, Ohio, in Alabama, it's tricky because they're fighting each other there. But North Dakota, South Dakota, there are a number of states across the United States where still gay couples, lesbian couples, same-sex couples, who've lived and loved each other for 30, 40, 50 years, raised families together, still don't have the rights to visit each other in hospital rooms, still pay higher taxes just merely by virtue of their sexual orientation, still don't have basic child protection rights, like the right to take home your kid from school. Real rights that affect real people in real ways. I want to discuss this hour my role in the marriage equality movement, because it's important at this stage when we are on the cusp, I believe, of obtaining equal rights for all. I do believe in June, the United States Supreme Court will rule, probably 5-4, possibly 6-3, that marriage equality is required for all adult consenting couples, not related by blood. In other words, doesn't matter whether you're gay or straight. You should have the right to live with the one you love and have that love, that family, that home protected by the state, just in the way the straight couples are protected. I think the United States Supreme Court is going to find that. I do think there is one possible alternative, and I want to throw it out there because I do think it's possible. I don't think it's likely, but I do think it's possible. I give it a 15% chance. I give a 0% chance. I guess I have to say 1%. I give a 1% chance that the United States Supreme Court will continue to allow states to not let anyone, not let any same-sex couple get married in their state. 1%, maybe less than 1%. That's not going to happen. But I give a 15% chance that the Supreme Court will answer one of its questions in a way that's not quite as beneficial as it could be. So there are basically two questions before the U.S. Supreme Court. One is, are states allowed to ban same-sex couples from getting married? Are they allowed to treat couples as less than and unequal by sole virtue of their sexual orientation? I don't think they can. I think the Constitution's 14th Amendment, which says that all of us cannot be denied by any state equal protection under the laws, makes it clear that whatever a state has for its straight couples, it must have for its gay couples. That basically equal protection means you can't have a right and not give it to all your citizens. I do think that a state could ban marriage entirely. Well, actually, I'm not even sure about that, because the United States Supreme Court held 100 years ago that marriage was a fundamental right. So I'm not even sure they could do that. But clearly, once they have any kind of civil right, it has to be applied equally to all. And I do think that's what the United States Supreme Court will find, 85, maybe even 90% chance, after oral arguments tomorrow on their ruling in June. There is, though, another issue. And if you're listening to the oral arguments tomorrow, I want you to understand what's going on in the nation's highest court. And that is the question, which in many ways is a much easier question, of whether one state must recognize another state's judicial acts. In other words, if you get married in Massachusetts, where marriage between same-sex couples is legal, does that marriage have to be recognized in Mississippi, where those marriages are not legal? And this is actually a question that I felt would be the easier question, the easier way to come at this issue, way back when the United States Congress passed a law saying that one state does not have to recognize another state's marriages, or more specifically, that the federal government does not have to recognize another state's marriages. And the thing is that actually states do have to recognize the judicial acts of other states. In fact, it says in Article 4, Section 1 of the Constitution, full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state. You got a judgment against someone in one state? It's got to be honored in another state. You got a arrest warrant for someone in one state? It's got to be honored in another state. And if you've got a public act, record, or judicial proceeding, which I would say includes a marriage in one state, it has to be recognized in another state. We cannot have the case that you're married in one state and you move to another state and it's no longer recognized. So yes, a couple married in Massachusetts can move to Mississippi, and that act is recognized according to the United States Constitution. And that to me was, I always thought that would be the easiest way to find this question, not the most ringing Declaration of Liberty, not equality throughout the land, not all citizens have to be respected, not the way I'd like it to be resolved, but at least a very technical and very clear thing. In other words, if you want to be married in Mississippi, you may have to travel to a neighboring state, although Arkansas, Texas, and, well, maybe Alabama, parts of Alabama. Florida now has same-sex marriage. But then you could get that act recognized back at home. So that issue, I strongly suspect, will be found in favor of gay couples, although I think the larger, more honorable way to resolve this, equality under the law, will be the ultimate conclusion of the court. But I want to tell you about how I got involved in this. Many of you know this story. I've talked about it in the air before, but not for a while. It's important to recognize how far we've come. And to me, this is a lesson that I take for any progressive vision. Maybe your vision is universal health care. Maybe it's income disparity. Maybe it's protecting us from climate change. Maybe it's reducing the number of guns owned and controlled by violent felons and insane people in America. All of these issues, climate change, guns, health care, universal health care, income disparity, these are big issues. These are important issues. These are vital progressive issues, and to be honest with you, These aren't issues that are going to be resolved anytime soon. The Republicans simply have too much power in the United States Congress and in state legislatures to get universal health care or reasonable gun regulation or a dramatic attack on climate change or, frankly, protecting workers and unions. But to me, the fight that I did, and I know personally because I was involved from pretty much the beginning of the marriage equality movement, tells me that things that seem impossible now can very well become possible in a decade or two. But you got to lay the groundwork now. And you've got to resist the naysayers, even your friends, even your allies, who say something can't be done. So here's my story. I'll tell you what, I'll take a break. And I'll begin my story after the break, and that way I can continue it uninterrupted. If you want to call in, it's 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. When we come back, I'll tell you my personal story of my history promoting marriage equality as one of the co-founders of, well, the marriage equality movement, I'm very proud to say. This is Mark Levine. I'll be right back right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I do want to talk about my own personal role in the marriage equality battle, and I will have time to do that later on in this hour and tomorrow. Tomorrow is actually the day when the oral argument before the United States Supreme Court on marriage equality will be held. But before I get to that, I want to do a follow-up from last week, because I had a teacher call in last week from New City, New York. His name is Joel, and we had a discussion, I believe it was Friday, about fracking, specifically about the damage caused to our earth, caused to where we stand, by earthquakes in Oklahoma, mostly dealing with wastewater from oil and gas production, not just fracking. But basically, when you put trillions of gallons of water into the ground at very high pressure, lo and behold, the ground crumbles. Again, that really shouldn't surprise anyone who's ever, I don't know, injected huge quantities of water into an orange. You know, eventually the thing will explode. But my point was not the scientific one, that obviously injecting this water would damage the earth. It was more the political one, that even though Oklahoma's earthquakes harm its population, a few very wealthy Oklahomans or corporations could pay off politicians and get them to do what they want, even though what they want is harmful to more Oklahoma citizens. And Joel, a teacher in New City, New York, said that he was going to teach this issue to his class today, and now he's calling in to tell us how it went. Thank you, Joel, for calling back in.
Taking my call again, Mark. I really appreciate it.
Sure. So how did it go? What did the kids say?
Well, first of all, I had them play the first part of your audio up to the part where I called in.
Mm-hmm.
And when it got to the point where you were explaining how the Oklahoma legislator banned the local ban,
yep,
I watched my students face it very carefully.
Uh-huh.
And the look of absolute confusion.
Why would they do that?
They're like, one kid was like, "That doesn't make any sense." Another kid said, "Stop the audio. I got to talk. We got to clear this up. I think I missed something."
How old are your kids?
These are high school kids. These are high school kids.
High school kids. All right.
They're juniors and seniors.
Okay.
So they're not. They don't realize the politics around them right now. They really are not aware of the damage of money in politics.
Yeah.
Their whole idea of civics, education of civics, kind of gone on the back burner. And I don't even teach government or civics. I teach science.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a good thing to bring up.
I tell you, at that age, I think kids have a tendency to believe that if laws exist, they must be just, they must be right, otherwise they wouldn't be law. It's just this sort of basic good government idea that we assume as kids, and then unfortunately we're rudely awakened later on in life. But go ahead. So go on.
I had a couple of students just jot down a couple of things, and I told them that I was reading to you.
Okay.
So one student said, it seems that money speaks, so our words don't really matter.
Yeah.
And another one was, it isn't fair to someone in Oklahoma to live in an uncomfortable environment and not be able to say anything about it because of selfish people in their millions.
Mm-hmm.
So
They got the issue. You know what?
And I think at least I opened up their mind to that they have to pay attention, and this is an important issue, and they have to, if they don't like the way this is, if they don't like the way things are going, they have to step up and change it.
They do, and they're going to vote soon enough, juniors and seniors, and they got to take their own charge of their environment. Let me ask you this. Did you talk to the social studies or political science teacher at all about this?
I teach in a school of 4,000 kids.
Uh-huh.
My department alone is 25 science teachers. I teach in a really large high school.
Uh-huh.
So I actually teach in New York City. I live in New City, but I teach in New York City.
Oh, okay.
So
Manhattan?
We don't really get along together. We don't really work together with the other departments because it's such a big building.
But that's a shame. Because you were teaching.
I can pass on. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's a shame. In effect, you were teaching social science to a class of scientists, and hopefully you were conveying to them, and you can with climate change and other things, that failure to believe in science, failure to respect science, has real political and scientific consequences.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, have you talked about with climate change, the politics of it? Do they allow you to do that? They give you freedom to talk politics in your science class? Joel? Oh, that's too bad. Well, I'll tell you what. We will get to Joel more. I'm sure he'll call back in, and I'm curious to find out more about his class. I think it's fantastic that something I said Friday inspired a class, inspired kids to think. Many of you know, maybe most of you probably don't know, actually, that I talk with kids, specifically juniors and seniors, all the time. Every week or two, as part of the Close Up Foundation, which is a nonpartisan foundation that brings kids from all across the country to Washington, D.C., and to their credit, doesn't just look at buildings, the United States Capitol, the White House, the U.S. Supreme Court, but actually engages the kids with questions of public policy, which I think is the exact right way to show kids around Washington, because it's a lot more than monuments here, folks. And what they do is they bring in a designated conservative and a designated liberal. I am the designated liberal, much like the designated driver, and we go at it. And actually, we go at it at whenever the kids ask us questions. We don't decide the topics. They do. So, you know, it's often abortion and gun control and immigration and fracking and the deficit and income inequality and whatever kids want to discuss, we do. And so I'm used to talking to kids this age. And what's fascinating about kids exactly that age, 16, 17, 18, they're old enough to understand the issues, but they're young enough to still be surprised by all the corruptions and complications of today's political life. So I think Joel in New York did a tremendous job in bringing those to the kids of this class. We'll be back on Marriage Equality. This is Mark Levine, right back after this.
When conservatives attack, Mark Levine is ready, Constitution in hand. And here's our favorite lawyer now.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I promise I will get back to the same-sex marriage question. It will be heard, by the way, by the United States Supreme Court tomorrow at 10 a.m. And the first 90 minutes is on the basic heart of the question, whether states can refuse to issue marriage licenses to gay couples. And then from 11:30 to 12:30, the question will be whether they can refuse to recognize marriages performed elsewhere. If the first question is answered yes, they may not have to answer the second question. But the heart of all of this is that we should start getting audio from the court, not live, because they don't do that, except for Bush v. Gore. It'll be heard around 12:30 p.m., and then it lasts 2.5 hours. So by the time I come on at 3, And depending on how much I can get done, I'll try to review and analyze as much as I can and talk to you about that when we come on air. And I also do want to tell you my own personal story. But we're finishing a conversation we started on Friday with a teacher in New York, New York. His name is Joel, and he was explaining to his kids something that really shocked them, how money in politics actually got around real science. And the fact that Oklahomans have to suffer earthquakes is just the fact that more powerful interests have more power over the legislature, enough, frankly, to surprise and shock his students. So, Joel, I'm afraid you got cut off before. You were saying that you teach in New York City. Do you teach where? Manhattan, Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens? Where are you?
I teach in Queens. I teach in Forest Hills.
Okay, got it. And you got cut off, so I want you to finish what you were saying.
When I got cut off, I was able to go back, and I think you said something about, am I allowed to teach about climate change?
Yeah, that was my question. The political questions that involve science. You're allowed to teach climate change is real because that's science, but can you teach that other people deny it?
Yes, and the thing is, I teach science in my science class, and I show them the scientific evidence for it, and I can teach without worrying about any repercussions. I mean, evolution is a topic that comes up.
Yep. Has there been any pushback? You're in New York City. You're not in Alabama. I suspect if you're in Alabama, you'd have a lot more pushback.
Oh, I tell
a parent.
I tell the students. No, from the parents, I don't hear anything.
Okay.
And the students, for the most part, I deal with, are very open-minded. And I will get, I'll say, some students may not really want to believe it, and I tell them, look, if you don't want to believe it, that's your personal belief, but this is what the scientific evidence shows, and it's been tested again and again. If you don't want to believe it, that's up to you, but the science doesn't lie.
Yeah, I'd be curious, and I know it's a huge school you were telling me about, but maybe you could walk over to another department, talk with some of the social studies teachers. I would think it's really difficult to discuss money in politics, because one thing, it's seamy. And I think when you teach social studies, you're often trying to talk about the good that is in America. And I think there's a lot of good in America. I love this country. But this is a seamy side. This is something that's ugly. It's something that's unpleasant. And you almost don't want to encourage kids to know some of the really bad things that are happening, except that, of course, to be informed citizens, they have to. I'd be curious at some point, Joel, if you'll go and talk to some of the social studies teachers and find out if they do talk about this in their classes.
I think I will do that. If I think I can at least, at the very least, talk to the head of that department and bring this up.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's some way that we can bridge the gap between science and politics, because scientific policy is important.
It is.
And as far as the students not knowing, maybe sometimes they're better off not knowing how seedy our democracy can be. If they don't know, it can't be fixed, can it?
No, that's true. That's absolutely true. And there's a lot of scientific political issues these days. Obviously, you mentioned fracking. You mentioned evolution. To me, stem cell research comes to mind. There are a whole bunch of scientific issues where the science affects the politics and the politics affect the science. And I'm just glad there are teachers like you out there, Joel. And I really appreciate you calling in. And anytime you want to call in again and share, or have your kids call in, you know what? I don't know. I guess they're at school during the day. Maybe not. 3 o'clock. They may be out of school. If they want to call in and express their 2 cents, they're always welcome. All right?
I'll do that. And thank you for the work you do. I really appreciate what you do to inform people. Thank you.
My pleasure. Well, let me ask you one last question, Joel. Are we on a radio station in New City, or did you find me on the web?
I use the TuneIn app.
Oh, okay. Just wondering. Progressive Voices?
Yes.
Okay.
We used to have a liberal station, a progressive station, and then it got changed over to something else. And I can't find one in New York City. New York City, we don't have progressive stations. It's ridiculous.
Isn't that ridiculous? It's crazy that in such a blue area, there's no progressive station. I'll tell you this, though. If you call back that old station, tell them to carry my show. I'd love to come back into New York City. That'd be fantastic.
Thank you. Thanks for the time. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for your call, Joel. Sanchez in Long Beach, California, wanted to make a brief comment about fracking. Go ahead, Sanchez.
Well, thanks for all taking the call, first of all. I listened to you out of the tape delay from KTNF in Minneapolis, which is my favorite progressive talk radio show. So that's where I do listen to you.
You listen to me? Wait, a tape delay in Minneapolis from Long Beach, California?
Yes, I have KTNF on my app as well as the TuneIn app, and
okay.
I also listen to them directly online. So that's how I listen to your program.
That's great. It's always good. Yeah. You can always just listen to me live, though. You don't have to listen to tape delay. You can just listen to Progressive Voices. But go ahead. Make your point.
Yeah, I can do that. I'm generally doing chores during the afternoon.
I gotcha.
That's okay.
Fair enough.
but I was enjoying your program on Friday, mm-hmm. and had to call in because there's another issue related to fracking that apparently no one knows about here in the state of California, and you're going to be interested in this one.
Okay.
An official state of California agency, one of Governor Jerry Brown's agencies, which is called the State of California Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources, last month recently held this, what is called an aquifer extension workshop. Now, we know that the fracking companies, after they're done with that toxic fracking juice, they eject it back into the water. You were discussing that on Friday's show.
The wastewater.
Now,
right.
Yes, the wastewater, the toxic black juices. Well, here in the state of California, this particular agency is now holding aquifer exemption workshops. You see, there are apparently loopholes the size of a Chevy Astro van that the state of California is now showing these oil and fracking companies how to use these loopholes.
Sanchez, help me out here.
Yeah.
California is one of the bluest states in the United States. You have a Democratic governor. Jerry Brown is no conservative. I wouldn't even call him moderate.
Yeah.
He's known for being a progressive Democrat. You've got a legislature that is probably one of the bluest in the nation. Both houses of California's legislature. I assume I don't know if it's 2/3 or not, but it's well over 50%. How is this happening in your state?
Well, you're not going to like the answer here.
Well, money?
From Jerry Brown.
Is it money?
You don't like the answer. Well, Jerry Brown says we've had fracking in the state here for the past 50 years. And here in one of the bluest cities in California, Long Beach, that is also true.
Fracking? No, wait. I've lived in Southern California. I know those oil wells that exist when I drive from LAX to LA. I know those. Those aren't fracking wells. Those are ordinary
oil
wells.
No, there are fracking wells as well. There are.
For 50 years?
Well, that's what Jerry Brown says. I'm still doing my research on that. However, this aquifer research workshop had all of these students and managers and all this in the in a Holiday Inn here in Long Beach, California. So a lot of the activists or a lot of the different various anti-fracking activist agencies gathered in front of this Holiday Inn here in the city of Long Beach. This was last month. I shot a video of it. I'd like to, before time runs out, tell you the name of that video, and you can see all the actions we did. The name of the video, for your information, is called Long Beach Anti-Fracking Action, March 24th, 2015. What we did was we held a public rally outside the Holiday Inn where the aquifer workshop was taking place in one of the conference rooms. We did a rally outside. I interviewed a bunch of people, including people from the Center for Biological Diversity, people from our local Stop Fracking
Long
Beach group.
Good for you.
Yes, but then here's the catcher. Then a lot of us activists sneaked inside and we did guerrilla theater style occupation of their rally and held it up for about 10 minutes. We all stood up, the activists stood up one by one, interrupted the, as I call them, eggheads, because that's how these people inside the workshop behaved. They couldn't believe, first of all, that there were activists there that were countering, that we're protesting, that we don't want our water poisoned.
Yeah. By the way, the way I would do it, and we could disagree about how to practice a civil rights protest. My view is the best way to do it is to stand up silently and hold a sign. They're less likely to kick you out that way because you're not interrupting them. But look, different people have different ways of doing it. Thank you for what you're doing. I appreciate it. And
take a look at the video.
You got to change things in California. As an ex-Californian, I got to tell you, your state, among all others, should be the first to put severe limits on fracking. If only because, not just because it's blue, but because California has enough earthquakes. You don't need any more over there. It's dangerous enough naturally. I can't imagine. Do they inject that wastewater in California into the soil in California?
Yes, they do. In fact,
that's really, really scary. That's really scary. Wow. Oklahoma, a state that really wasn't subject to earthquakes, is now subject to earthquakes. California already is naturally subject to earthquakes. Right. That's really, really scary. And if you make the case, I would make the case, look, I'm an environmentalist. You're probably an environmentalist. We can talk about carbon. We can talk about climate change. And I agree with you. But climate change, unfortunately, doesn't move people enough because we're talking about something that will happen in 10, 20, 50 years. Tell the people of California that what they're doing is likely to cause more earthquakes, and I'll bet you can get a bill through that California legislature pretty likely split. I think that's a winnable issue for you, Sanchez, to build a movement around. I really do.
Right.
Just talk about earthquakes. Nothing scares a Californian more than earthquakes, and I know I used to live there many years ago. Thank you very much for calling in. Folks, I will get to marriage equality. If I don't do it today, we'll do it tomorrow right after the Supreme Court hearing. But if you want to talk about fracking, one of the nice things about this show is we have flexibility to go where you want to go. And David from San Francisco, also California, of course, had more to say about fracking. Go ahead, David.
Oh, yeah. Howdy, Mark. You know, I'm I was just going to let you know, too, that I'm not calling from or through listening through the Internet. I'm actually calling you from a podcast in the year 2017.
and you're calling from the future. Is that what you're telling me, David?
Yeah, these podcasts are handy. It's just the long-distance charges are a little sketchy.
You know, I didn't even know that they perfected time machines 2 years from now, but I'm learning things. Anyway, tell me what David from the future, what you have to tell us.
Well, to first of all, reassure Sanchez that thanks for the warning, because it's getting worked on as we speak.
Okay, and, so it took 2 years. All right, that seems about right.
You know, I work on energy issues up here in San Francisco, and it's interesting. The people have known this for years, and if you remember,
the earthquake, known what? The earthquake risk or something else?
Well, both. I mean, for example, you know, I'm in my 50s, and about back in the 70s, there was a big trash hauling company called Browning Ferris. They were massive. They were nationwide, and they started hauling hazardous waste. And it then became known that Browning Ferris was actually an organized crime front group, a front company, and they had to go out of business. They had to kind of change direction, so to speak. But many of the fracking juices that they're using are what they're calling trade secrets.
That's true. They won't disclose everything that's there. We talked about some of them
on
Friday, but they won't disclose all that's there.
Right. And so if you think about it, here are these companies that are supposed to be dumping hazardous wastes in some legitimate scientific way to make sure that the world's not getting polluted.
Right.
But if they just put a label on it and call it a trade secret and then just inject it deep in the ground, who's to say? And if you remember in the BP spill of 5 years ago, we the people were trying to figure out what was in Corexit. Corexit was the anticoagulant that BP was trying to use in the Gulf of Mexico.
Right, I remember.
And so we tried to get scientifically a breakdown of what was in Corexit, and they refused to tell us. I actually got on a radio call-in show and asked Admiral Fat Allen about the secrecy of it, and he admitted that he didn't know what was in Corexit, and it was a trade secret, and blah, blah, blah. And this whole idea...
I wonder if the regulators know what's in Corexit. Somehow I suspect not.
Well, I mean, you could go in there and find a barrel of it and just take a dip. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, you don't know if every barrel is the same.
Yeah.
Or if, because actually England itself does not allow Corexit to be used in the North Sea. So British Petroleum.
It is scary. I'll tell you, what we don't know is definitely even scarier than what we know. No question about it. Let me just ask you, David, the same political question I asked Sanchez a few moments ago. You're in San Francisco, arguably the most liberal city in one of the most liberal states in the United States. How can this be happening in California?
I hate to say it, but I actually, many years ago, 20 years ago, when Jerry Brown was out of office, I used to sell advertising for him. And he was on about 30 radio stations. I know the guy, but there are...
I thought he was a solid liberal. I thought he was a solid progressive. Is that not right?
He's got... He was at the... there was a point where he was the financial, he was the head of the Democratic Party in California, and he was responsible for fundraising. And he was one of the biggest fundraisers in the history of California.
Oh, it always comes around to money. Always.
You know, there are ways that we can sidetrack the boy, but you know, he's easy to.
I'm really sorry to hear that. I used to have a lot of respect for Jerry Brown. As someone, I know, you know, what he did as mayor of Oakland. He turned around a very poor city. And I'm just disappointed. What can I say? It always hurts more when people you think are friends turn against you. You know, I expect evil things from Dick Cheney and others. I would have thought better of Jerry Brown. So I'm sorry. And by the way, if any of you are listening and you want to defend the governor, call in. I'd love to hear a defense because, you know, I used to respect this man, but after what David and Sanchez have been telling me, I'm disappointed. I'm quite disappointed.
I think it's both money as well as there. You just mentioned the one that shall not be named, Cheney.
Yeah.
You know, he
Darth Cheney. You can call him if you wish.
If you remember back prior to 9/11, the big scandal was the Enron scandal.
Right.
And right after Bush got into office, Dick Cheney put together an energy policy.
I remember it divided up Iraq. 10 days into the Bush administration, he was already dividing up Iraq. The Halliburton gets this. The Shell Oil Company gets this. Everyone gets their piece. There you go. But you know what, Mark, when we take a break, I want you to come back in with the Empire Strikes Back music if you can find it. David, we got to take a break. We will be, though, right back right after this. 888-488-MARK. 888-488-6275.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I just think that every time we mention Dick Cheney, that music has to be played. I'm not sure why. It just seems appropriate. So we got a little off track. We were talking about the marriage equality oral argument tomorrow, and we continued our discussion on fracking from Friday. But you know what? That's okay. This hour does not just belong to me. It belongs to you, and I really wanted to hear from our teacher in New City, New York, to find out how his teaching politics to his kids have gone. We will, though, talk more about the same-sex marriage oral argument tomorrow and Wednesday. You can hear the argument tomorrow. It'll start live at 10 a.m. Eastern time, but they won't play it until after it's over, and then they're going to release the audio. Why? You got me. It's the Supreme Court. I don't know. The only one they've ever done live as it was happening was Bush v. Gore, one of the worst rulings ever in American history. But they're going to do that. You'll hear it at 12:30. It'll probably play till about 3 Eastern time, around the time I go on the air. I'll try to listen to up to a lot of it and report on you that just when it happens tomorrow and then also on Wednesday. But you should know I'm someone who's been around this block a very long time. Didn't get a chance to tell my story. I don't know when I'll tell it, tomorrow, Wednesday. But the heart of my story is this. When I, in California, proposed the nation's first full marriage equality bill, it was considered so radical that gay rights groups opposed it. A lesbian assemblywoman told me we would not see marriage equality in our lifetime and that I was wasting my time. But I didn't listen to those predictions. I formed Marriage Equality California, began the first Valentine's Day protest across the nation, wrote D.C.'s marriage equality bill, and I'm proud to say in less than 2 months, it'll be across the nation. This is Mark Levine. Tune in tomorrow for more of the Inside Scoop.